Blog Talk Radio.
Get access to this Jackson.
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
Yes.
And now Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson.
Sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Our first goal, know who they are, where they came from, who the world we inhabit came to be. They will no longer be content to cut fry roll their fresh man. But instead, it was to the two-handed person, priest, transforming the black tournament to the new African tribe, meaning the origin root of national first not so much capitalized as he is our irrational response to the country. Engaging the culture of criminality into our people when it allows our students not only to contribute hear it, the crewmen got it, and it, and it got it. Four, the fish in the rebuild is a place by New African American. And constant attitude out of for their tradition. Once officially educated fellow, our tools in conjunction with our faculty implement this emphasizing you have been fishing with our material need for self-sufficiency for the benefit of transportation. Five, spread new African prison early to reduce the city of our people. Then, our city aim was transferring the prison system by two African folks at our university urban as a part. Here, you students will be skilled with the tools to fish the federally deep prison. Third, 18th Andrew Jackson, the expressed the white national platform, first white, becoming a white man, war nation, and a princely African nation. 1847, Freddie Douglass of the first issue of a newspaper in North Rochester, New York. 1869, a former Animal American Congress, preparing for the State of the Union address, President Lincoln warned against radical anti-slavery initiatives and urged Congress to state colonize New Africa as some place or place in climate consciousness to them. December 4th, 1807, the death of Fred Hall, who was an social act, community organizer, Sonic leader in Boston. 1833, Philadelphia Fair, American Anti-Slavery Society, 1895, South Carolina Constitution Convention, 1899, 47 Congress Convention, one new African Congress, George H. White, 1906, Alpha Alpha found first Central Collegiate Street Level Congress in Africa. 1909, two African Alpha News found by James H. Hunter. 1907, two Ellis opened at Congress of Harlem. 75th, 1784, Jeff Ford, Phyllis Wheaton, 827, Bill Pickett, Renown, Gautama, 1881, Fort St. Congress, New African Congress, Bill Wall, and out again at Sacred School, High School, Class 1, 16, New African, 1933, 21st Amendment Bill in Prohibition of Crap, 1935, National Council of Negro Women was founded in New York City. Mary McLeod was born at the first of our list of six that they hired a child called the National Council. Those that they trained couple. 1915, Kansas, Richard Harris, Swiss Supreme Court of Holden, federal statute of women, which is the married for. 1961, Prince Norman, turned to head. Also, a man let Jeff Streetberg visit white people remove him to kill an African to try to reinstate him. He later shot in the head by white death. Both of them he was murdered by Gilmore. 1885, 49 Congress, being two new African Congress, James E. O'Hara, North Carolina, Ralph Paul, during no time, there were no official questions. Carolina Democrat elected James Sluice, third new average speech, federal legislation, said three questions. December the 8th, 1896, John White Democrat, 1950, U.S. company named James Steve, then Chief, 1950, first test group, limited wage, differential between two African. 1963, Right Reverend John M. Burgess, made Suffragette Bishop of Massachusetts, became the first new African bishop, W. White, did diocese for his sister called Christ. December 9, 1867, Lord of the Constitution, Free Land.
Hey, Diane, brother, how you doing? Hey, brothers, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Aaron, brother, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. It's a little hard on my end. I'm not sure what's going on. It's a little hard for me to hear y'all. I don't know if it's on my end or not. But overall, I'm
okay. What about now?
That was much better.
What about
do
now?
Do that one more time. Yep, I hear you perfectly. I thought I was tripping for a second. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, I'm doing good, comrade. It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Deruba Balogun with the Republic of New Libya. Akil won't be able to join us today, actually. I believe they're caught up with some birthday event celebrations as well. So shout out and big fellow return and happy birthday to my comrade Akil Abara. Hello. It got muffled again. You had fisted for a second. Whatever you did, you had came close to the mic or something.
Okay, hey, I don't know what God over.
There you go.
United
there you
United.
Go. Yep, I got
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yep. There you go.
Okay.
Whatever you're doing, you're doing it, yeah.
Okay. What I was saying, I was thank you for coming to our broadcast here, not to understand it. Thank you for the work you did, the past, the present, and the future, right? You know, for the people who are listening, right, tell the people a little about yourself so they know exactly who's speaking and where you're coming from.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Again, my name is Deruba Balogun. I was born and raised in Cleveland, or as we say, New Libya. And even before I even get into New Libya a bit, I've been, you know, I'm been organizing in the city a little bit over 10 years now between different projects within the New African community as well as the local indigenous community. I've done tenant organizing. And even recently, I was once the, I was the founder and chapter lead of our local Huey P. Newton Gun Club Alpha Company chapter here in Cleveland. And the time I was doing that work, that's actually how I became familiar with George Jackson University. So big shout out to y'all. I think I first became familiar through the brothers down in Dallas, Chairman Eric Coffrey and Free Rakim Balogun. You know, he's still locked up, a political prisoner of ours. I have mad love for all the Guerrilla Mainframe and Huey P. Newton Gun Club comrades down in Dallas, and that's actually how I got familiar with George Jackson University. So it's funny how things kind of work, and you know, work in cycles. So now here I am, you know, honored to be on this show, and I've been doing different community organizing from tenant organizing to supporting political prisoners. We had a Black August event a few months ago at the local African American Museum. I've done a lot of self-defense work, like I said, with the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, Alpha Company, and now with Republic of New Libya. And I'm also a student. I'm an anthropology student. I just graduated from the local community college, and I'll be transferring to Cleveland State. So my hands are always full and tied up, but I love doing what I'm doing. I wouldn't trade it for anything else. And you know, we're gonna keep on keeping on, like how they were saying earlier.
Yes, sir. What actually prompt y'all and inspired y'all to come up with the name the Blackness Republic of Libya. Recreate it. Which part of that? What happened? What are the catalysts to create that situation?
Yeah, so, you know, we noticed, you know, some of the local New Africans here, like I said, we've been a part of various different organizations and projects and campaigns. And, you know, at varying levels of years and different works, but, you know, we've all, over the time, been able to intersect and cross paths, especially in Cleveland being a smaller city. And really what prompted, well, quite frankly, you know, just even a little bit more about myself, you know, growing up, I was always – I leaned towards the especially from influence from the Panthers and Huey, et cetera, always leaned towards, you know, the more so intercommunal line of the Panthers and Marxism as well. And I'm still highly influenced by Marxism and Pan-Africanism and the dialectical method. But specifically when it comes to, you know, the question of intercommunalism versus revolutionary nationalism, through my, you know, largely through experience, just deeper political analysis and study, right? I shifted my opinion with the long story short of just realizing that, you know, the revolutionary nationalism, considering imperialism, considering settler colonialism, considering that we are a captive nation, you know, we are a colonized nation within a nation, revolutionary nationalism, to me, has the most relevant meaning for new African black people and all colonized people around the world, from Palestine to Turtle Island to Burkina Faso. It's the most relevant revolutionary theory that we have. Like Malcolm X said, that, you know, black nationalism is what has been able to consistently free us under the yoke of imperialism. And when I started to make that understanding, that deeper understanding of black nationalism, it also, of course, then once I have that theoretical mindset, it allows me to then put that in practice, right? Because that, you know, it is a two-way street between theory and practice. And even in the way I was engaging in a lot of the work that I was doing, whether that was in the Housing Justice Coalition or the Huey P. Newton Gun Club Alpha Company, the local Cuyahoga County Jail Coalition, you know, a host of different organizations and coalitions, it made me pivot the way I operate based on this new understanding of black nationalism and the need for decolonization. And through that, you know, because of that, I became, and not just me, but, you know, others we've become, you know, who's been on a similar path, we became increasingly, I guess you would say, disillusioned by a lot of what's going on now. You know, we're seeing so much neocolonial puppetry and black bourgeois nonsense. And also even within a lot of multinational spaces, multinational organizations and parties, et cetera, there's been so many contradictions. You know, the same contradictions that, you know, we're seeing now, we're playing out in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, which is why so many black new African comrades had left communist parties and stuff like that and became involved with the black nationalist and pan-African movement. So we were experiencing a similar thing here locally in Cleveland. And I, you know, eventually, you know, to speed things up, you know, I've been meaning to connect with my brother Akil, who I consider a very, very, very close comrade and a friend of mine. And it was funny because before we met, there was a lot of people on the side, or, you know, some people on the side who were saying, "Oh, you should meet this brother." You know, people telling me I should meet Akil, people telling Akil he should meet me because we were of a similar mindset. We're going through a similar experience like I had just explained. And, you know, eventually we did connect. I think it was actually over Instagram, I believe, is how we first connected, funny enough. And we immediately hit off just so well because we were so much aligned. Like I said, our experiences, our disillusionment. And we're like, yo, we got to link up in person. Like, let's make this happen. So that's what we did. And immediately, you know, we both were, you know, getting involved with the Housing Coalition and tenant organizing, which we're still doing to this day. But we're like, we need to further expand that to, you know, to an organization that's specifically by and for and focused on new African people and revolutionary nationalism. It's time to put theory into practice. And here in Cleveland, unlike the 60s, where black nationalism was huge, and I will argue was largely kind of the birth of largely the black nationalist movement, going back to, you know, the early 60s with the Revolutionary Action Movement. You know, this is pre-Panthers. And, you know, and it was Revolutionary Action Movement in Cleveland and also SNCC that eventually helped spread black nationalism around the country. But, you know, today here in 2023 and last year in 2022, you know, largely from the effects of neocolonialism and the rise of the black bourgeoisie, that black nationalist movement was largely, quite frankly, you know, eradicated. And, of course, COINTELPRO as well. So we're like, you know, we need to, you know, do our part and carry the torch on and kind of re-spark that movement and energy. We were already familiar, again, through the political education, the history. We were familiar with Cleveland's history, again, from Revolutionary Action Movement and Max Stanford, Don Freeman, Afro said, Republican, New Libya, you name it. You know, there was just so much going on. And we ended up forming an organization. You know, we were the co-founders of, well, initially we were called the Black Nationalists of New Africa. And we took that name as a play on words in homage of the Black Nationalists of the Republic of New Libya, which was founded, I believe, in 1967, with founding members being Fred Ahmad Evans. And we didn't want to end up like a copycat organization or somebody using a name without permission, like you see with a lot of these other organizations as well, where they take the name or the symbolism without any sort of direct lineage or the same ideology. So we wanted to pay homage but keep our own contemporary flavor with it. So we went with that Black Nationalism of New Africa, and you know, we wanted to be kind of that Cleveland connection back to the Republic of New Africa, especially considering the history. You know, there's still some conscious New African citizens here at the time, including Queen, and so we connected with her as well. So that's how we were able to get kind of going and flowing. And one of the first event we did, actually, I believe, was that Black August event. We held it at the African American Museum, like I said, and we were blessed and fortunate enough to have some of the original Republic of New Libya members be able to speak about the history here in Cleveland. We also had Sababa Keeley, second command of AfroSet, call in, and he spoke about his experiences of movement history, specifically in the context of prisoners and political prisoners. And so we were immediately making connections even from the jump, from the inception of the organization with the elders. That was something that was very important to us because we realized one of the biggest contradictions is there's a disconnect between the younger generations today and the elders, and it hurts both generations. So we wanted to make sure that we maintain that connections. And really, what really propelled us was every year they have an anniversary, July 27th, they have an anniversary for the Glenville shootout, the Glenville Rebellion, where the Republic of New Libya was ambushed by the pigs. And it was actually one of the first, I guess you would say, urban guerrilla kind of combat operations that went down in the 60s. And even the Panthers had noted that in the newspaper, and there was a large Free Fred Ahmad Evans campaign that formed around that. And ever since then, they made sure that they always kept not just Fred Ahmad Evans' name, but all those who were involved in the Republic of New Libya and involved in that struggle. You hear a lot about Fred Ahmad Evans, but we also have to give love to Asu Bey, Nandu, and all the other warriors who were involved, Asante, all of them, Dudu. Big love to everybody of Republic of New Libya and Africa. We got to, you know, especially, you know, the ones who are still here, most of the elders have passed on, but the ones who are still here, so we got to give them their flowers. So we made sure that we wanted to support the elders this year, and they recept, you know, they brought us in immediately with warm arms and love and reception. It was an immediate connection where they were happy that there was youth who, quite frankly, knew who they were and cared enough, and we were happy to have elders who immediately took us under their wing. We hit it off really well with them. We helped them out with the event. Now we're tied in with the event here on now, we're on the committee, and eventually got to the point where the relationship became so strong where those elders blessed us with bringing the name back. Because, again, like I said, we didn't want to be copycatting or jocking off them or whatever. The elders themselves says, we want y'all to we already know that you follow in our footsteps. Well, you might as well take it the full distance and just take the name. Because, quite frankly, the movement would still be alive today if it wasn't sabotaged. So, really, this is just a continuation of that. And so that's where we're at today. And New Libya being specifically, New Libya was always tied to the larger New African independence movement at large. And so was Afrocent. They, you know, Harlow Jones and them were some of the early signers of the RNA Declaration up in Detroit. And New Libya was the name designated for Ohio, specifically Cleveland, similar to how you have Jackson, Mississippi being Medgar Eversville. You have John Hyman Clark District down in Georgia as well. New York City, I believe, is Mecca, et cetera, right? So Cleveland was New Libya. That was our New African district or identity. And, you know, so we wanted to be very much not just honoring that history, honoring those elders, but honoring specifically the land and locale that we're in, right? Because that is so important as revolutionary New Africans is to be very much focused place-based because, we're with the territorial mindset involved. So that's really where we're at today.
Okay. My next question is, I understand that you're a younger brother. You're 20 years old, right? Now,
I'm 28, and Akil's 20 years old. Actually, Akil just turned 21. He just turned 21.
Okay,
you're 28,
okay. Okay. I see, as a younger brother, right, how do you view being a new African in conjunction to talking with elders and other individuals about new African independence? How do you view being a kind of new African right now as a young brother? How do you view it, and what does it mean to you?
Well, you know, the way I view it and what it means to me, it's first and foremost, it is who I am. You know, it's you know, just like how we say, quite frankly, all black African people, right, have claim and birthright to new African identity, to the land, right? We've been here for hundreds of years and worked blood, sweat, and tears with the land. We created a new cultural not a fully new, but a synthesized cultural identity from the motherland to the land that we're at here, not to mention the indigenous connection that we made as well. So that's all a part of our identity as new African people or Africans, not Americans. You know, that's how I refer to it. But it's up to the individual to really ground themselves and assert that identity and connect with it. And that's what we mean by a conscious new African citizen, right? Where, again, we all have that birthright, but it's up to us to kind of follow on that path. So it goes even beyond just a political ideology, but it's a lifestyle as well. It's who we are once you become conscious of that. And for me, it's monumental. It's almost beyond words because it gets into that level of that ontology, that state of being, who I am, is even on a spiritual route, you know what I'm saying, connecting me all the way back to my ancestors. So when it comes to being a new African person, the first word that comes to mind is just grounded. You know, I feel grounded in that, in who I am, in my identity, and connected to that history, to the people, to the community, to the ancestors. And another word is liberated. You know, not fully liberated. Obviously, our people are not fully liberated. We're still under colonization. But liberated in the sense of mentally, you know, being able – and that's an ongoing process, dialectically speaking. But, my mind has begun to awaken, has begun to liberate through the neocolonial conditioning that we have gone through. And in relationship with the elders, you know, again, that's largely outside of my own study and reading, et cetera, is largely the elders who brought me to this understanding. Quite frankly, I wouldn't be reading half of what I've been reading if it wasn't for elders. Not even just, you know, elders I met, you know, recently and, you know, organized me, even going back to my own family, you know, if it wasn't for my grandma, my great aunts and them who were, you know, into varying levels of history and politics, you know, I wouldn't even be on the path that I am today. So I'm always immensely grateful. And again, like I said, one of the priorities, the things that I want to continue seeing is a betterment of a relationship between the elders and the youth. I think there are contradictions and hurt on both sides, which gets in the way sometimes of a connection with us, and that is largely so by fascist intention and counterintelligence, et cetera. But it's our responsibility as conscious new Africans to push through those contradictions and to reconnect not just with our elders, but with the black family, with the new African family community as a whole. So I feel like the work that not only myself is doing, but the newly reformed New Libya is doing, we're just doing our birthright. We're just doing our responsibility in that regard. And we know we're going to continue to organize and encourage other youth and elders and everybody in between to get involved, whether with us or, you know, even whether they, you know, they get involved directly with us or not. You know, we could just plant that seed and push them in a positive direction, then we're doing something.
Okay. For the people who are listening, right, what exactly is the Black Nationalists of the Republic of New Libya? What are some of the things y'all are doing in the community?
Right on. So, you know, on that first part, you know, like I was, I touched on briefly earlier, you know, the Black Nationalists of New Libya, you could say it's like a, at least the way I see it, it's like a subset or just a local part of the overall New African umbrella. Like I said, where you have those down in Jackson and Medgar Eversville doing the work that they're doing there for New African independence. It's the same thing here in Cleveland, but under the umbrella of New Libya. And that goes back, again, to the mid to late 60s, 1967. And largely the work that we're doing today is continuing and picking back and off of where, you know, where we were left off and sabotaged a few decades ago. And first and foremost, that's building new African consciousness, conscious new African ideology and identity. We made sure that, you know, our first program started with political education, and that's an ongoing program as well. We just finished reading on secure communication that the Black Liberation Army had put out a few decades ago. Because again, before you can even get into a lot of the on the ground work, you have to have a proper scientific understanding of who you are, where you're at, why, and why you're there. You know, because, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's practice that can be done, but if you don't have the proper analysis, you can go in circles and end up going nowhere, but doing the wrong type of practice or reactionary sort of work. So we wanted to make sure that we ground ourselves in the proper political education where we're studying, you know, the RNA documents that are, you know, all on the PJRNA website, where we're reading books such as from George Jackson, Blood of My Eye, that's my favorite book, Assata Shakur's autobiography, et cetera, France Fanon. Again, having that proper education so we know where we're going. And then as we're building that consciousness, we have an understanding of our responsibility as colonized people and our responsibility for a revolutionary struggle. Then the next step beyond there is community organizing, where, you know, not only be connecting with people in the streets and in the communities and the neighborhoods, not just into our political education programs, but into some of our other programs as well. We're, you know, one of our biggest struggles that we've come to understand here in Cleveland has been housing and pushing back against gentrification. You know, because even beyond the obvious issues of dealing with slumlords and poor conditions and homelessness, et cetera, when you look at it from a larger political scale, you're dealing with capital and settler colonialism. And as new African territorial nationalists, you know, we see gentrification as just another settler colonial threat on the new African nation, especially as it disperses our urban community. So that's something we've very much been involved in, right, as housing organizing, as well as self-defense classes, kickboxing classes, firearm training. Matter of fact, we'll be at the range this weekend. Medic training, learning basic survival skills. One of our next programs we're going to have going on is an Each One Teach One class, meaning where we get brothers and sisters together just to learn how to do proper trade skills, carpentry, plumbing, et cetera. Because something that we've consistently, you know, through social investigation, through talking to people in the neighborhood, is this consistent concern of this need for skills and doing for self and the lack of that sort of knowledge. And, you know, part of being an organizer is not just trying to get people to follow your own agenda or ideology or whatever, but synthesizing with the people on the ground, doing that mass line kind of social investigation, understanding what the people want and meeting people where they're at. And of course, how do you build a nation if you don't even know how to do basic hands-on kind of work, how to do the building where you don't want to rely on non-new African people to do the, you know, certain work for you because you don't know how to do it, right? So everything that we're about, it's all about building collective, communal self-determination, whether we're talking about, you know, political education, trade work, self-defense classes, security, housing organizing for housing security, supporting our political prisoners, you name it. At the end of the day, it's all about building up that communal sense of self-determination, reinvigorating that sense of Black New African power, and repair, you know, by any means necessary. And of course, that means struggle with the capitalist class. That, you know, that means sometimes engaging in protests or civil disobedience or going down and confronting local politicians, et cetera, and also being in solidarity with other nationally oppressed people as well. You know, we've been very much involved in supporting the Palestinian movement here, as we understand that our struggles as nationally oppressed people are linked together, and we support what they're doing and support what we're doing. We've done security at their rallies. We spoke, et cetera. So that's really what it's been all about, is slowly working towards building that self-determination and freeing the land, you know, building up the mechanisms for communal land development, land acquiring as well.
Okay.
Cultural classes, you know, we've been doing things, you know, trying to get that going, not to cut you off. We've been trying to get some cultural programs going as well. We want to get a Swahili class going soon, a poetry class going. Nurturing every aspect of New African life, not just politically, but culturally, historically, et cetera. I just wanted to put that in there as well.
Okay. I know. I understand that y'all been working on obtaining the community center, right? How important is that in regards to the work y'all doing? What would a community center mean to the community? What would it serve as a community?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, it means everything. You know, like I said, you know, with the different comrades, we've had various levels of experience and work that we've done. But one thing, throughout that diverse experience of work that we've been doing, we've all came to the same conclusion and understanding that for a multitude of reasons, it's very difficult to organize, or at least much more difficult to organize, when you don't have a central meeting spot. Especially something that you can call your own, you know, because, you know, historically, you know, whether we're talking with the Hubian and Gun Club or the Housing Coalition, all this other adjacent work that we've been involved in, we're always bouncing around. You know, one meeting we're at the African American Museum, the next meeting we're at somebody's house, the next meeting we're at a library, we're out, you know what I'm saying, bro, just all over the place. And with that inconsistency, Not only does it quite frankly just make it difficult or harder to organize sometimes because you're just scrambling to find a space, right? To not just have a meeting, but to even put on the program. So not only does it just does that kind of inconsistency make it hard to organize from just a general community building sense, base building sense, we come to see, especially when we're talking about freeing the land, right, and having that connection with the land and the people who inhabit and work the land, we need to have a piece of it ourselves. And even if it's a small kind of point, you can build out from there. So we're just like, you know, we need a priority, because this is a conversation that we've had for years, but it was never really a priority for us until recently. So we had the higher understanding where we're like, we need to really prioritize getting a community center and eventually getting us some land as well. And we were fortunate enough to actually get a it's still under repair and renovation, but right now we are in a storefront building. It's a shared storefront space. It's about three different organizations or entities within the storefront, but they're all kind of allied. It started with, matter of fact, shout out to Minister Rowland and the Nation of Islam here locally and the Superior Renaissance Development Corporation, who's been pushing back against the gentrification from all the other development corporations, trying to rebuild the black nationalism and the black economics within the Glenville area. And, you know, when we had stated our intentions to them that we were trying to do similar work, but we just needed a space, they invited us to use their space that they already acquired rent-free. We just have to help with the electric bill. So that was a major, major elevation in the work that we're doing in advancement. So much love and respect to again, the local Nation of Islam, Mr. Rowland and Superior Renaissance. So on part of the building, that's where they meet, the Nation of Islam, and they have they're working on the bean pie, you know, making and selling bean pies. They're also, you know, they have the meetings, et cetera. The next to them is Player T Hollywood in the Hood, where similar to George Jackson University Radio and PGRNA Radio, is actually a local black-owned TV show, radio show, if you will. It's political, but maybe less political focus and more just broad and general. But they're there. They're close allies with us as well. We were on their show a few weeks ago. Much love to Player T. And then next to that, again, all in the same buildings where we're at, where we have our meetings, where we host our events. And again, it's still under renovation and repair. Stay on the lookout for any upcoming fundraisers that will be posted online and shared around. And, you know, matter of fact, eventually, through collaboration with the Superior Renaissance, Superior Avenue is one of the main streets that go through Glenville, just south of St. Clair, St. Clair being made famous by Bone Thugs and Harmony. Matter of fact, I'm right around the corner from 99th and St. Clair, where Bone Thugs is from. And so, you know, I live in this neighborhood, and so is the community center. And Superior and Huff and Wade Park was the heart of the black nationalist movement, politically, economically, et cetera, within the 60s and 70s. So we've been working in tandem with Superior Renaissance and other organizations to revitalize that. And eventually we'll be acquiring other buildings and plots of land as well. But, you know, starting where we're at, we're very thankful and very happy. And, again, that's where we'll be able to put on, you know, we already have a political education programs going on there, doing our Each One Teach One program, self-defense classes, firearms, not firearms, you know, that'd be, you know, obviously at the range, but all these different programs that we've already been putting on, now we have a central place for that. And not even just for the classes and trainings, but just as important, if not more importantly, this being a central meeting space for the community at large. You know, something else that we consistently hear is how part of the problem in the new African community, especially for the youth, is there's very little to do You may come from, you know, a dysfunctional family background, disinvested schools, lead crisis, lead poisoning, you know, all these, you know, factors, poverty, et cetera. And then when you don't have the proper community spaces and recreational spaces and outlets, and obviously it can just be a recipe of disaster, a breeding ground for the sort of internal contradictions that we see in our community. So we wanted to also take it upon ourselves to be able to host that kind of space for the youth, for anybody in the community to have that kind of space. So that's why we said that it's not just the New Libya kind of headquarters, but it's a community space at large. But what makes it important is it's no Boys and Girls Club or rec center or anything like that that's funded by the city and got the police all in there and the mayor and everything. It's a Black nationalist supported, funded, directed, facilitated space to make sure that those who are there and tied to the community center have the proper guidance and knowledge, so they're not sucked in by that Black bourgeois brainwashing and mentality. So we'll also, you know, as we get the space together, we'll be offering tutoring programs, helping those with job skills and job finding, having some office support and computers for people as well. Again, just being almost a jack of all trades for the community, a one-stop shop for what the community needs. Therefore, we're able to twofold meet the community's needs while also building up community revolutionary consciousness and building up the organization and the Black nationalist movement at large. And, you know, and again, you know, it may start with just one community building, but, you know, step by step, you build out by there by any means necessary.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's very important that we all control the operative community we exist in by putting our own institutions and educating our people. Now, you mentioned political education, right? For the people who are listening, people who are listening in the future, right, what exactly is your definition of political education, and how important is it to be politically educated?
That's an excellent question. I would say political education is fundamental. Like the late Chairman Fred Hampton says, without education, you're nowhere. You know, and without proper education, you have these aspiring, you know, Negro capitalists that you put in becoming Negro imperialists. You know, it's the most, it's probably the most important thing, because, again, before you can even properly engage in practice, not even just as a community organizer, right, but just as you engage with the community at large. You know, maybe not everybody is going to grow up and join a revolutionary organization, you know, but, you know, to build a nation, we need everybody involved. We need the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers, the scientists, the engineers, et cetera. But all those diverse needs and skill sets and institutions still needs to be backed by the proper education and proper guidance. So, one, you have a clear sense of self, and once you have a clear sense of self, you have a clear sense of responsibility, not only to yourself, but to the community, because you realize yourself as part of the community and vice versa. So no matter what you're doing in the New African community, you're doing it for the betterment of said community because you have that understanding through the education. And, you know, specifically, I believe political education, that entails acquiring the knowledge and skill sets through a proper scientific analysis of the world around us, of what's going on past, present, and future. Looking at the scientific theories and perhaps using that dialectical method to be able to understand past, present, and future politically, culturally, historically, et cetera. And, you know, again, for us, our political education is dictated or informed, I should say, by revolutionary Black nationalism. And through that political education process, you understand exactly what revolutionary Black nationalism is and how it connects to that need for self-determination and controlling our institutions, like you said, and building up our national awareness and control through, you know, scientific socialism, et cetera. But that, you know, but through that political education is how you're able to get that mindset as well. And I always try to differentiate between, you know, we could call it like a revolutionary political education versus a reactionary one. And when I say revolutionary political education, it doesn't even have to just be revolutionary black nationalism. It could be, you know, we could take it to expand it internationally, the Pan-Africanism, Marxism, anarchism, whatever your school of thought may be, right, the revolutionary political education. But I would juxtapose that with reactionary political education, because sometimes you hear it like these reactionary bourgeois reformist kind of organizations saying that they have political education programs. But when you go, it is no more advanced than a regular high school government class, right, where they're teaching you the three branches of government and they're telling you where your local voting poll is and, you know, who the Democrats and Republicans are. And that's basically it. You're not actually, you know, learning anything deeper than that. You're not creating an analysis, because it's one thing, okay, sure, to know what the executive, legislative, and judicial branch of the United States government is, but a proper political education, a proper revolutionary political education, that is, will not only tell you these basic facts of the government, of history and politics, but it'll give you the scientific analysis of understanding the relations between these entities and institutions. Meaning, now that, you know, I'm familiar with the United States government, I have an understanding and analysis of what the government is all about, right? I have a class analysis. I understand the true functions of not just the United States government, but government capital around the world, how these things actually function, what their benefits are to themselves, that is, what the destructions are to the community. And once you have that understanding, once you have that proper analysis, that's how you're able to begin to build towards revolutionary alternatives as well. So I always try to say that, you know, your political education has to be guided by a revolutionary theory. Again, it can't just be ninth grade government class or something like that. It has to have political theory guiding that. It's more to know than just saying, like, hey, this is how you vote and this is where the voting poll is, but now you got to be informed by revolutionary theory on what's entailed with electoral politics and if you should even engage with it at all, for example, and if so, how do you engage with that structure, you know?
True indeed. You know, you have an African name, right? What does your name mean, and what is significant of having an African name?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I actually acquired this name fairly recently, you know, within the past few months. My full name is Daruba Ahmed Balogun, Daruba being Swahili for the storm. And I took that name paying homage to Daruba bin Wahad, co-founder of the Black Liberation Army and a former member of the Harlem chapter of the Black Panther Party. He's someone I greatly admire, study, listen to, et cetera, and it's had a major impact on my personal development. His work as an individual and also at large through the Panthers and the BLA, et cetera. So that's why I took that first name of Daruba, middle name being Ahmed, which is Arabic, and that name is in homage, of course, of Fred Ahmad Evans, and I wanted to be able to pay that proper respect and homage to someone who laid such a pivotal role and foundation through the work he was doing in and out of New Libya. So that's why I was able to put that in there, and I also wanted to draw that connection to, you know, if you look at the Black Nationalist Movement, Islam plays such a major important role as we connect to our African identities. And quite frankly, I myself am not a practicing Muslim. There was a point in time where I was, but I still pay respect to that history, that legacy, that culture, abroad and specifically true friend of mine, Evans, I met many highly praised or respected. And then Balogun being a Yoruba name, meaning warlord or war chief, and that was an homage of Larsa Kwesi Balogun, who was also a member of the Harlem Black Panther Party, Black Liberation Army, and giving, again, homage to the freedom fighters that we can never forget about, alive and deceased, behind the cage or not, you know, like, you know, I find it very important to be able to raise up his name. And others, again, you know, we hear a lot about Huey Newton and Malcolm X, as we should, but I wanted to spotlight names that maybe we don't hear as much. You know, Daruba Ben Wahat, Fred Ahmad Evans, Kwesi Balogun. So that's how I was able – so through all of that is how I was able to blend those names together because of those special meanings for me. And the answer specifically on a general level, the importance of taking an African name, I believe it's highly important, right? Because like I was saying earlier, being a conscious new African citizen is beyond just a political theory and, you know, it's specifically a lifestyle, it's a way of life of who you are, how you engage with yourself as a person and in the community. You're connected to your true higher revolutionary and national identity and consciousness. So, of course, through that, it only stands the reason to carry that same name as well. If I'm going to fully strip away the chains, you know, as best I can of colonization, of Eurocentrism, then, of course, why wouldn't that include, you know, our name that we carry with us as well. So I believe, you know, that is just part of that decolonization process of, you know, again, now that I have this identity, I have this awareness of myself being a conscious new African person, now it's time for me to put that in practice, right, in my everyday life, because, you know, the personal is political in a sense that it's not just when I'm outside engaging and doing a program or a training or an event or a class. It's my everyday life, even when I'm at home chilling on the couch or talk to a comrade or talk to my girlfriend or just the way I engage in the world, right? Like, it's an everyday thing. So, again, the name that you carry that is vital to who you are should be reflective of that.
Okay. You know, interesting when you said at the beginning that you part of Huey Gun Club, and you mentioned some of the comrades down in Dallas, Eric Caffrey and Rakim Balogun. You know, I know all those brothers consider themselves part of the Balogun family. All of them got Balogun last name. You know, yeah, so when I thought about it, you said name the Balogun, that's the name that they carried themselves, like the Balogun family in general. From Eric Caffrey Balogun to Rakim Balogun and the others, you know, so many others that came to the guerrilla mainframe and also right. Came through that also came through the genre collective as well that they had.
Exactly.
You know, came to the collective out of the guerrilla mainframe as well, right? You know, I caught us at a Balogun. You know, through that
exactly,
aspect of things,
yeah.
like the family lineage. So, I just thought about it. I was thinking about it when you said all that, right? And that's when I saw your name. I was aware of all this information, right? You know, I also understand that you're the Minister of Defense for your collective, right? In regards to that, my first question is, does your collective function on the Central Committee, or does your collective model the cabinet of the PG? And also, what exactly does a Minister of Defense do?
If I heard your question correctly, we try our best to, you know, we're a growing organization. We've only been around for a few months since about summertime. So as we grow in capacity and personnel, it will allow us to continue to exemplify those kind of responsibilities and roles that we do try to model largely from the PGRNA, the Black Panther Party as well, were having those ministers, you know, of defense, of Minister of Information that Akil has, Minister of Culture, Minister of Finance, et cetera. That is largely the thought process. And just a quick side point, yeah, that's definitely, I would say, an influence of mine as well as the Dallas Comrades. Like I said, you know, Rakim Balogun and Yefeyu Balogun are close comrades of mine. And Yefeyu Balogun in particular is the one who really wrote me in to the Huey P. Newton Gun Club Network and the Alpha Company and everything that they had going on. And, you know, matter of fact, I'm long overdue for connecting with those comrades down there in Dallas. You know, I used to talk to a lot of them, you know, on the phone. You know, being in Cleveland away, you know, we'll have long phone calls and stuff like that. So matter of fact, I'm long overdue with connecting with some of those brothers and sisters down there. And they've been very supportive of our work up here in Cleveland, and we've done the same for them. And, you know, seeing the way they've carried the Balogun name has definitely been an influence on me and the work that's going on here in Cleveland. And then, you know, the Balogun name being in Harlem and, as well, and tied to that militancy and that self-defense. And that's, and again, that's part of the spirit that, you know, I myself and we at large here in Cleveland are trying to reinvigorate. And, you know, to answer a question on what exactly the Minister of Defense does, well, a lot of that is largely informed, again, by my experience with the Huey P. Newton Gun Club Alpha Company. I was, you know, the lead organizer of the chapter here. I was the one who brought the chapter here. And, you know, although I'm no longer a part of said chapter, largely due to capacity, you know, we're all involved and busy with many different projects. You know, I'm still a strong supporter. But, you know, during my time with them, not only was I like the lead organizer and the one calling, you know, a lot of the meetings and stuff like that, but I was the one, along with a couple others, who were leading the hand-to-hand combat self-defense trainings. We led Stop the Bleed trainings where we're teaching people how to use gauze and tourniquets to stop bleeds, especially from, you know, gunshot wounds, knife wounds, et cetera, proper firearm uses and handling. And through that, through those skill sets, carried it over here, you know, because that was kind of naturally sort of, you know, my forte, and carried it over into the Republic of New Libya. Because, of course, to build a nation, to build an economy, to build a government, you have to have, quite frankly, you know, not just a people's army, but community members who are able to defend themselves and look out, because that's all part of self-determination. So as Minister of Defense, my role is largely to facilitate those sort of trainings and awareness around, you know, quite frankly, one, the importance. You know, we've had conversations and classes just on the importance of the need for self-defense and militancy. You know, some people haven't always prioritized it or understood that, so I've led classes on that just to get people to even understand the need of militancy and self-defense. I've also helped support legal, although I'm not a lawyer myself, I've helped organize classes where we have partnered with attorneys, and I help facilitate and teach classes on basic Ohio self-defense laws, similar to what Huey Newton was doing with his time in the Black Panther Party, because, of course, it would be irresponsible for me or any instructor or leader to teach people something about medic training or firearms or self-defense, yet you know nothing about any sort of legal repercussions that may come with set skills. And then, of course, again, you know, I help lead and facilitate those classes and trainings as well. And even goes beyond, you know, the education and the training and the skill sets. But another thing that, you know, part of the work that I do as Minister of Defense is I'm one of the people who helps lead in conflict resolution and mediation as well, you know, within and without the organization. You know, I'm someone who tries to, you know, not, like I said earlier, not only is it irresponsible to teach people firearm and self-defense and medic and all of this without the proper legal understanding. But quite frankly, you have to, it is also the responsible and correct thing to also have the skill set and the patience and understanding of the need for de-escalation, mediation, bringing two-party, conflict resolution, things of that nature. So as Minister of Defense, that's something that I hold and sit with as well as a responsibility. And, you know, it's a role that I truly cherish. And it's a role that I don't take lightly. It's a role that I'm quite frankly still learning. You know, I've been doing it for a few years through different organizations, but it's something that I'm consistently learning and getting better at and improving, like you do with any skill set, right, or any sort of education or responsibilities. It's an ongoing process, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Okay. If an individual is interested in joining your organization, right, how would he go about doing so? How would he contact y'all, and what are some of the prerequisites in regards to acceptance to the organization?
Right on. Yeah. So right now, currently, as we're developing and building up our infrastructure over these past few months, largely people can reach us through Instagram, through social media, Instagram and Facebook. You can reach out to Black Nationalists of the Republic of New Libya. Or really, if you just type in Republic of New Libya, it should come up on either platform. And you could, send an inquiry or communication with us that way. We also have an email address at Black Nationalists of New Africa. We haven't changed, that was from before we changed it to New Libya, but we still use that that same email address. That's Black Nationalists of New Africa at proton.me, I believe is for email address. And eventually we will also be creating an office phone number. We don't have that line up yet, but as the community center is created, we will have a phone call, a phone number that people can reach us at that will have publicly advertised, business cards, social media, et cetera. For those who aren't on social media or those who don't want to email us at Black Nationalists of New Africa at proton.me or check us out on social media, you can just call us directly. But that's, that's still in the works. And we've actually had a lot of requests or questioning around creating a website as well. So eventually we'll get that phone number and website up. But right now, like I said, it's through the social media and social media and email. And to really get involved after you reach out and set your intentions, the process, it's fairly simple, just in the sense of we take people through the political education process that's mandatory for everybody. Thomas Sankara said, a soldier without education is a potential criminal. That's something that, we highly value. So you have to go through a 3-month process of political education. And you also have to show dedication as well, not just showing up to those classes and getting education, but we want to see consistent commitment as well. There's a lot of people out there who may say they're down for some and then never show up to any events or trainings or classes. So we expect people to not only attend 3 months of political education, but be able to at least commit to 3 events in a row or something like that, but showing some sort of, or even if it's not in a row in a time frame, showing that you are serious, that you are truly interested, and it's not just talk, but, hey, I went through those 3 months of political education. Hey, I checked out a firearm class. Hey, I came to a culture class. I volunteered at your food drive, et cetera, So through that kind of vetting process, the onboarding process, we're able to not only ascertain people's commitment and education and awareness, but also helps build the relationship between both parties as well, where, we get the, build trust and build a relationship, something that we have to take importance always, not in the paranoid way, but just, you know, in a reverent way, is operational security. You know, sometimes when organizations blow up and grow super fast, that can lead to contradictions. We've seen that in the past, including with the Black Panther Party. So we take vetting and relationship building very seriously. Again, we're an organization that's open to all new African people, you know, of any gender background or orientation or whatever. As long as you put, you know, your new African identity first and foremost, and you have that commitment to liberation and freedom for new African people and all colonized people, you know, this is an organization and space that's open to you. So for those who are interested in getting involved, like I said, reach out to our social media, reach out to our email, and we'll love to connect with you and take it from there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I got one more question, and I'm gonna open the line for callers. You mentioned earlier about having a Black Olives event, right? What exactly does Black Olives mean to you, and what do you think about when you hear the name George Jackson?
So, you know, for me and the Republic of Libya as a whole, Black August is of vital importance. You know, it's to commemorate Black New African revolutionary freedom fighters, especially those political prisoners, those who are behind bars. We can never forget those who have risked their lives and laid their lives down for us, some who have made the ultimate sacrifice, or some who are still incarcerated to this day, you know, whatever we're talking about, of course, Mamiya or Jamil Al-Amin, et cetera, you know, we have to, you know, be able to continue, you know, for too long, you know, our comrades, our elders, our veterans, our prisoners of war, you know, have been neglected. So, you know, Black August allows that time of reflection to really uplift those names and those who supported us for so long, and we can give support back to them. And, you know, furthermore, beyond the general of reverence and commemoration, not celebration, but commemoration of the new African history and movement and freedom fighters and the political prisoner movement, it also grounds us in our own present conditions and responsibilities of how we need to engage as new African people, as organizers, as community members. Study, Fast, Train, Fight is a guiding light for what all new African people need to do, not just in August, but year round. And again, not just when we're out in the field doing some organizational work, but in our everyday lives, we should, you know, studying, fasting, training, learning the proper ways to of struggling, and then getting out there and fighting and putting in the work. So that's something that we really highlighted in our program, and we have 4 days where each day highlighted a specific area where, you know, we're on the study portion. We had those movement elders, the New Libya elders, actually come in and talk about the history of the Cleveland Black Nationalist movement. And we also talked about the history of Black August as a whole and George Jackson and the Soledad Brothers, Attica, et cetera. That was part of the study. And then when we got into FAST, we looked really into the need of discipline of, you know, not just the specific call to action for fasting, that too, but also having the large understanding of the importance of keeping a healthy diet, of keeping healthy practices and habits. So we had a conversation around that, and we screened Dope is Death with featuring the late Dr. Matula Shakur, because we saw that in a way that there was a correlation, because we're still looking at the health of the community. And then when we went in the train, we did a self-defense kickboxing class. And then fight, we spent that last day talking about ways to plug into to local organizing, whether that's with the Republic of New Libya, PSL, Party for Socialism Liberation, also supported. We also brought in the Cuyahoga County Jail Coalition, which is we've been organizing for the past few years to stop the building of a new jail of, you know, $500 million-plus taxpayer dollars proposed, when that money could be put towards social programs and services and reentry back into the community. So on that last day of fight, we were showing ways people could plug into these current organizations and campaigns. Again, tying that Black August Study Fast Train fight, but into the present conditions and the local fight. And we also ended that last day of fight with a letter writing campaign as well, where we were writing to different political prisoners as well. And, you know, you asked me about George Jackson in particular. Quite frankly, you know, I was first and foremost, blood in my eyes, my faith, out of any revolutionary theory book and maybe any book, period, blood in my eyes, my favorite book. George Jackson means the world to me and the New African Independence Movement at large. You know, being a political prisoner and an organizer behind bars, they were able to make waves within and without of the cells of spreading revolutionary Black consciousness and the struggle for freedom from a heightened militant stance and theoretical stance, which is why he was such a threat to the establishment. And it's also why his legacy was so impactful in a positive way, not just to theory, not just to militancy, you know, being a field marshal of the Black Panther Party and leading organizing behind the prison walls, but, you know, it was his work, George Jackson, Soledad Brothers, Angela Davis, et cetera, Attica, that began or catapulted today's prison abolition movement, where, you know, you hear about Angela Davis, obviously, Ruth Wilson Gilmore and their writings around prison abolition. But, again, all of that goes back to George Jackson and the Soledad Brothers, Attica. You know, you can also attribute it to the Free Huey New movement as well. So, of course, when we're talking Black August, it obviously has to highlight the movement going on at Soledad, because that's obvious, you know, there and adjacent prisons, obviously, is where Black August was originally started and founded and spread out from there. So it's always so important to highlight those origins, not just the origins of Black August, but, again, the prison abolition movement at large. You know, that is so much of George Jackson's legacy, and that's something that, you know, we can never take for granted. And I'm very happy to hear that he is consistently getting more and more and more and more attention and support. And, you know, him and, of course, his brother Jonathan Jackson, who was just as much of a dedicated revolutionary. You mentioned youth. Talk about a young lion, you know, a man-child, as George Jackson described, you know, where, you know, below the age of 20, still a teenager, what, 16, 17 years old, putting in that level of work. That only can be an inspiration to today's movement, as well as we continue to, again, engage with our youth.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate that, brother. No, I appreciate the work you're doing in the past, work you're in the present, work you're in the future right now. Thank you for coming to our broadcast. At this time, I want to open up the line for a few callers. If anybody got anybody got a question, statement, or comment, please press 1. Open your line up. If anybody got any question, comment, statements, or announcements, or you want to talk to the guests, please press 1. I'll open your line up. If anybody got any question, comments, or statement, announcement, press 1. I'll open your line up. Okay. I got a caller, 216-738. Your line is open. You any question, comment, statement, please do so. Your line is open. 216-738.
Black Paul, Yoruba.
Black Power,
can you hear me? Is that Brother Tim Weaver?
Yeah.
I've been a little bit under the weather and self-reflecting,
but I would like to participate. You know, I ain't got no whip, though.
Yeah, you know what? I'm so glad. This is such a, I guess you could call it a holiday miracle. You've been on my mind a lot. It's been a little while since we spoke. You know, Brother Tim Weezu speaking about connecting the different generations. I've known Brother Tim Weezu since I got involved in organizing. What has it been? At least, I don't know, 10 years, and you've been like a big brother to me, you know, an uncle.
Let me tell you, DeRube, I've been known for years, and Rob, his heart, that's how his heart is in the right place. He made well. I just don't want him to burn himself out. He got a lot of fingers in the pie. He do a lot of work for he and do. It's time to pass the torch. I've been chopping up with Bamani, but this, that, and the other. I just don't want you to fall off because we have to have capacity.
Yes, sir.
And I believe, from what I've seen and listened and watched, that your intentions is in the right thing. You ain't trying to be scurvy. You ain't trying to be slick. None of that. Your heart is in the right place. And the last thing, the book you just got through talking about, Secure Communications?
Yes, sir. Yeah, but we just finished reading. Yep.
I think it's a good thing. It's a good book and whatnot. Because we got a lot. What I'm saying is the New Libya, the Black Panthers, all these different groups were infiltrated. So it's not none of their fault. They just didn't know. So
exactly.
By reading this, we can read and understand. We won't repeat the mistakes of the past.
Yes, sir.
And I'm glad. And then I'm also glad you started with empathy. You can have all kind of community, you can have this, that, and the third, but you got to have an internal security structure because people are bullying you. And dog you and everything. If you're not able to withstand all that, you can't provide programs for the community, whether they're sent by the police or they got their own agenda. Could you give me some feedback on that, Mr. Balagoo?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly why. Matter of fact, that was the first reading that we did. We just finished it a few weeks ago. You know, and we really wanted to, like you said, we have to set the tone of a proper culture, meaning a proper security culture, because before you can get into all these other sort of work that you want to get involved in at various levels, you have to have a strong culture and infrastructure of operational security and communication. Because like you said, we can't afford to repeat the same mistakes that our ancestors before us made. And, you know, mistakes are always going to be made. That's part of that dialectical process. But we can't afford to make the same ones, right? And that's why we study.
We want to be proactive. We want to be
exactly.
proactive.
Exactly.
And preemptive.
That's why.
Because
that's what
just to keep it a buck with you, 2024, It's going to be a pivotal year. Yeah, I don't know. When I say, let me be specific. If you've been watching the poll, it may be a constitutional crisis when people get out here wild, because it appears that the former president, Mike, won the election with 5 felony convictions, and that says a significant segment of the population is for the president, means we have a lot of closeted white nationalists, and a lot of things may go sideways.
Right.
Now, that's just based on what the mainstream folks say. You know, there's been a lot of conversation that we don't even know what direction this country is going on, to be 100, because the other dude is 80 years old. He didn't have a brain surgery, had an aneurysm. I don't believe in mainstream policies, but the fact that the majority of people do can send this place into disarray, because there's a lot of things that could happen. And the polls say Trump is way ahead. And I don't just put it on one individual. It is a significant fact that there's so many people up behind.
Right. It's the phenomena that is the even larger concern or problem, you know,
exactly.
Even beyond.
So that's the if they find out this, that, other, and they don't get in, they may have another toss.
Right.
Because now the people are going to perceive him to be cheated again, which could instigate another toss.
And we already saw a taste of that a few years ago, right? When they were storming the Capitol, and that's the significant thing that we have to look out for 2024. And part of why, again, secure communication, operational security, learning self defense, having a strong militant culture, et cetera, is going to be even more vital as we move forward. Because, like you said, we can look at 2024. If Trump wins, then we just had the continuation of his extreme alt-right fascist presidency, which we already know.
If he says he can't win and all this old whoop-de-woo,
yeah,
then
it's looking bad either way.
Gonna be pissed. And
he
white
wins,
folks are well
we got
off.
Trump. Exactly. He wins, we got Trump. He loses, the whole MAGA base is wilding out. You know what I'm saying? So that's why
yeah,
it's so
that's
important.
Exactly. Put it in the, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's another reason why, because, and I'm glad you're doing the Palestinian thing. A lot of people say hey, the Arab this or the Arab that. No. But the same thing happened to them, I always tell people, we next on the list.
Yes,
Black
sir.
Folks is next on the list. And to build them relationships is good. You know, I don't know all that happened at Algebra Tea House and all that, but I know whatever happened out there, it serves us well that we got to step up our game.
Right, because this is just the beginning, locally and across the country and internationally, the rise of fascist violence and hate crimes and what we're seeing in the gross amount of violence that's going down. It's shocking, it's disturbing, it's intimidating for some, but we have to organize and get prepared and not be discouraged, because like I said, this is just the beginning. You know, what we're seeing now is going to be twice, if not more, come 2024.
You see what they decided to do? The Palestinians up in Vermont, the landlord went up there and killed a 6-year-old boy in the other area. I say that.
Exactly.
They Palestinians, what would they do, the new Africans?
Right.
If
you can look at history
and
what they're already
doing.
Exactly. You know, like I said, you can look at history and see what they've been doing, but you can only imagine what they're about to try to do, you know. And that's why
mm-hmm.
it's so vital and important
yeah.
that we continue to
yeah.
organize.
I ain't got to be all outdoors. And I do want to let you know that Mr. Griffin, Dwayne Griffin, He documented everything. The PSL,
oh, yeah.
And you know they'd be down in City Hall, he'd be texting. When y'all be out turning up the City Hall, he'd be texting the other councilmen. And then when they call up, that's why he say the name twice, because he be writing it down. That, there's a security issue. As you know, they got cameras all up in the city.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And this already been.
I watched the whole thing. Well, Dallas or whatever. They have documented that information. That's why he told Joe Jones and the rest of them company, just be cool. Don't say nothing. Because they documented it and sent it straight to the FBI.
That's why there's already been. I'm talking about the protest at City Hall. Right. And,
they documented
you know,
it. That's why he told all the councilmen just chill out.
You know, they feeling the pressure between, you know, with the Palestinians, what we're doing, with PSL, what everybody's been doing in and out of the country. They're feeling that pressure.
He had PSL. That's how I know he was documented, because he repeated the name, but he had it back with PSL. Then he turned around and repeated it again and got it right. That's how I know he was documented. Then he repeats the name. And then, like, to make sure he got it right so he can be on recording or he can write it down. That's how I know.
Right, yeah. Keep it in record. Exactly. You know, they feeling that pressure, and they're seeing a growing movement. So, of course, through that dialectical relationship, as that movement grows, the Free Palestine, the free new African people, of course, the fascist guard, is going to make their moves and plays as well as the pool. And that's why, like you said, we have to stay vigilant and we have to stay proactive and not reactive, because that fascist vigilance is growing. There's already been people getting followed home from the police. I'm sure there's already been other security issues that are only going to continue to heighten.
I'm going to give you an example. Did you see what happened out there at Westlake? Hello?
Matter of fact, I was at Westlake. What are you referring to?
When they left, they stopped doing traffic stops.
Oh, right.
Westlake.
Yep. Matter of fact, they had pulled somebody over before I left. And they had police on top of the parking garages, and they were flying drones around.
Yes. And I say this not to be labeled a point, this, that, and other. I'm just, whether it was Palestinian or was black. I just want to illustrate what you in for. They had the drone and this and that, and they was laying for you, and they was waiting on them. And when they left, they started pulling people over, asking for their license, and harassing people. And like you said, they was on top of the building. Whether this protest or another protest, we need to be clear about what's in store, and they are laying for you. Am I right or wrong?
You're right, and it's only, like I said, it's just beginning. Especially, you know, that sort of repression and surveillance is only going to increase, especially with the presidential election. You already know that's going to happen. So I don't think I wouldn't consider you belaboring a point, because it's such a point that needs to be reiterated. You know, because it's the same thing that they dealt with in the 60s with the counter-surveillance. And that's why it's so important for us to emphasize the need for a proper security culture today, because they working to do the same thing, that counter-intelligence.
Let me tell you what touches my heart about you. I was up there in Pittsburgh. Two planes happened. They had a J-20 protest. I said, what? How y'all get jammed up? And when Donald Trump said, he said, we didn't know.
Yeah.
We didn't know nothing about no calendar. We were just out there doing our work, too. Ain't nobody tell you nothing. Then I asked them about Rion. Remember Rion?
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Right. It used to be with Black Lives and all that. And so I met some people up there. I asked her what happened to her. She said she had to leave Cleveland because she was being stalked by the police. She living down there.
I remember that.
These are illustrations of what I'm talking about. And what touches my heart about, because a lot of young people, 20 years old, 22, 21, 18, they don't know nothing about no Kelly. They don't. They don't know that it, and I don't consider it, but what it may, this is the perception. If you get too loud, they will stop you.
Oh, yeah.
Mom said, well, I was told that if she came home, they're done with Jimmy. This, that, and the other. Looked like somebody been in the house. She leave the house and wasn't undercover, all outside, and black ones, white ones playing it off.
Right.
So it is imperative. It's not a military thing. It's a life thing, off sex. You know? You know, it's an offset. If we ain't on top of our game, and it's gonna be a problem.
Exactly. We don't want to repeat that same history over again,
right,
and make them same exact mistake.
That's recent history.
You right. Know? Yeah. It ain't even that long. Yeah. Exactly.
Because he was scared to go back up in the house.
Yeah, that was that was a few years ago, and they still doing that.
Right. And it's like, and that's when I said, touch my heart, because you need to know all this. People 22, 24, 23 years old, they don't know nothing about this. Do they? They have a stone to me.
You know, and a lot of people don't find out until.
Right,
she said, exactly.
I didn't even know nothing about what Ketlin is. Shit.
Right.
Ain't nobody told
you. Don't learn until a lot of people don't learn until they're on the wrong side of it, you know.
Right. That's my whole point. And we need to be proactive and preemptive on these matters.
Yes, sir.
So, but Monty been good. He got I questioned him and cross-examined him and whatnot. It came back with the right and the left. We was on there about Black August, asking about Kamazi, about this, and about that, and who was this and who was that. He's a big his story on Black August and many other things on the R&D.
Right.
I asked him why this thing, why this and why that, why this and that. I asked him for clarity. He didn't stutter not one. And he gave specific details about Siddiqui, Kamazi, or whoever. And he gave some specific details that we don't even know about the Islamic influence, this, that, and the other, Swahili side, and this, all that. He's thorough.
He's extremely thorough, and that's why I'm honored,
right,
you know, to be able to make this connection, you know, even deeper and deeper with Brother Bumani and the rest of the PGRNA.
Right.
Yes, sir.
And the brothers down there have been doing it for a while. Eric, him and his lovely wife. One night, well-grounded, mature dude, Yafe, he got a newborn baby, and all this stuff.
He so do.
They just ain't wild. You know, because they have families and jobs, too.
Exactly. And too. Yeah,
they just ain't going out here tripping.
Exactly.
And they've been doing it for a minute. I met Eric down there with Bumani about 8-9 years ago down there in D.C. at the Black August thing and the million prison thing. None of them dudes is for nonsense. Immature. They're about business,
right,
and doing and being right, not stealing or being slick or lying. And Bumani, the same thing. I know that Bumani is very, very keen on accountability. Being a case for life, but just keeping a buck 100. And That's something I learned about. Me, just be keeping a buck with me. You know, just be accountable. You know, and a lot of times we let shit slide. But yeah, I want to conclude on that. I ain't gonna hold you long. We can go back to the back to Vermont.
Appreciate you, brother Tim Weezo, and I'm gonna follow up with you. We got. Matter of fact, we're gonna be doing a winter supply drive and a toy drive on Saturday the 16th, starting at noon, and then the following weekend on the 23rd, we're gonna be distributing everything to the community on Superior. So I'm gonna hit you up with that, Tim Weezo, and we're gonna collaborate and loop in there.
All right, then, my good brother.
All right, good to hear your voice. All right, take care. Back to you, Brother Bomani.
I appreciate you, Conrad. Appreciate you calling, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. No doubt. No doubt. I was just listening, man. Yeah, I appreciate it, brother, all the statements and everything. You know, the brother been doing the work himself, right, in regards to the prison movement in Ohio, you know, so I understand.
Yeah.
I know the brother. I know. Yeah, I appreciate the work, you know what I'm saying, the commemoration. You know, one thing about it, when a person takes an oath to something, right, it's on him or her to fulfill that obligation, right? It doesn't matter what nobody else is doing. You take the oath to yourself as an individual. So it's on you to uphold everything what you stand for and also to exemplify what you stand for and just do the work.
Right,
you know?
On, yep.
A lot of times people say, you know, people be saying, you know, people be talking about different individuals not doing certain works, right? And a lot of times we waste a lot of time talking about other individuals not doing the work where you can be doing the work yourself, you know, and making everything count. You know, the old motto was raise your hand, free the land, right? And that basically means that you got to put it in the work to free the land. You got to raise your hand.
Exactly.
You got to move around. You got to do the work. It's not just a rhetorical thing.
Yeah.
It's not just a rhetorical thing. You know, the thing that we all need to be doing basically, you know, is building institutions. And also only the institution that we're building. We need to own the institution that we're building, right? We need to own the land that we have. We need to own the houses. You know, we need to control the businesses. We need to circulate new African money in our community at least 30 or 40 times. You know, before I leave the community, we need to do that, you know, as much as possible.
Exactly.
You know, those things of that nature, right? But it's very encouraging to see younger brothers in their 20s, 21, 20, 19, 18, 21, 22, 23, young sister, young brother, you know, actually doing the work, actually making a difference in their community, right? That's a beautiful thing, man, especially in regards to what history had done to us and how the propaganda has been proposed upon us to manipulate our mind and think that things are not actually going on when we actually have people that actually don't live these different atrocities, don't live these different attacks. Don't live, you know what I'm saying? Cleveland has a strong revolutionary history. If it be looking at the people like Dr. Muhammad Omar, Master Stanford, at the beginning of RAM, also beginning of the PG, William Granton at the beginning at the PG, the Afro set, you know, the Afro set in Nation of Libya, all your different individuals, you know what I'm saying? Even the aspect of the Cleveland Black Panther Party, you know, another aspect that actually be involved in the movement for quite some time now in regards to our particular history, right? Be it the Black Liberation Movement or the Pan-African Movement, the New African Independent Movement, right? So it's always good to see younger people carry on their legacy, continue to push their torch, right? You know, continue to push their torch, man. You know, at this time, I only give you the opportunity, right, to leave us with your final thoughts. Leave with your final thoughts, you know, and what you want to leave us with.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, first and foremost, again, I just want to give a big thank you to you, Brother Bomani, at, you know, George Jackson University, the PGRNA, and everybody who's been real warm to not only me, but this rekindling of the Republic of New Libya. We look forward to future rekindling of our relationship that was once established and rekindling it moving forward in the future. And, you know, we do plan on attending New African Nation Days next year to further that, that relationship rebuilding. And, you know, my final thoughts being, you know, matter of fact, echoing back to, you know, our conversation and later what Brother Chimwiza was saying, you know, this is just the beginning in the sense of the work that needs to be done. And quite frankly, the, you know, the ongoing threats that we're up against, you know, I don't think any new African person should not only just not be ignorant, but complacent and idle. As the world passes by, we all have to be involved. We all have to get, you know, like I said, we all have to be part of this movement, whether politically, culturally, historically, scientifically, engineered. So whatever, you know, whatever you're doing, whatever, you know, your heart draws you to, I encourage you, you know, especially the youth, but all people, all new African people and all people around the world, to, you know, not only study and educate yourself, but then put that knowledge for our collective liberation into practice, no matter what profession or line of work you're in or how politically engaged you are or not, put in that work to better uplift the new African community, the new African family, and all oppressed people around the world. And I'll end it there. You know, there's always, you know, like Kwame Ture said, you know, if you're not part of an organization, join an organization, you know, just, you know, we all have a part to play, no matter what it is.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate that. You know, again, I appreciate you for doing the work that you do. And also for those who are listening, New African Nation, they will take place next year at Dr. John Clark Town, which is Misnomer, Kalama, Georgia, at the embassy, 2503 Dawson Street, Kalama, Georgia, 31903. It will take place on the days of March 29th and March 31st, which is the original days the Virginia Republic of Africa was founded in Detroit, Michigan, 1968. For more information, you can go on the PGR website. You go on the PGR social media handles on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, you know, and you also can Google New African Nation Day on Eventbrite and purchase your tickets. You know, with that being said, I'm going to say long live the African independent movement, long live the resistance. And if you have any comrade, close comrade, social, and friend behind enemy lines, please look into George Jackson University. You can be found on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and name George University. And we also have a website, which is www.georgejacksonuniversity.gju.com. Again, it's www.georgejacksonuniversity.gju.com. Law of the resistant, law of the guerrilla, free to land.
By any means.